Blog Talk Radio.
This meeting is being recorded.
All right, we're live.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Saturday Morning and the International Mastermind Association and our Think and Grow Rich conversation. Every Saturday morning, we are here. And this Saturday morning, we are having our master class. What that means is that we will take the chapter of the previous week, or the previous month, actually, and have a roundtable discussion about it. And we want you to be a part of that discussion because we are simulcasting on radio, Facebook, and Zoom. So you have no excuse not to join in because people will be monitoring the radio for your chats, your conversations and your questions, and adding that to our discussion. If you're on Facebook, put it in the chat. I'll put it in your comments, and someone will bring your comment to us. And on Zoom, you're in the chat, and we're watching that too. So no excuse. Join us this morning because we're talking about decision. And I am Ursula Odom, one of your hosts, along with four other wonderful people. And I'm going to introduce them to you again, because I know you know them. You've been here every week. But let's start with Mr. Galen Bingham. Good morning, Galen, the man with the velvet voice.
Good morning. Good morning. I am so excited to be here. My name is Galen Bingham. I am the leadership strategist, CEO, and founder of Kill Global Coaching and Consulting. I help leaders bake permanent success into work and life. And, you know, at the cornerstone of that is this requirement that you make a decision. You have to make a decision. I'm going to be talking about that as part of this chapter. This is the foundation of any success that you have any hope of having, is that decision. And I'm just so excited that we get to play with each other on this chapter. And I'm looking forward to the rest of the show.
Thank you. And the master builder, Ms. Ann McNeil, the lady that is responsible for the idea and the whole process that we are a part of. Ann McNeil.
All right. Good morning. And yes, I am the master builder, helping you to build a stronger and better life and business. And I'm so glad that I decided to do this, to read the book and allow it to read me. And I'm excited that each of you have decided to join us. So put on your seatbelt and buckle in.
And the man with the quiet wisdom, Dr. Peter A. James. Good morning, Peter.
Thank you so much for giving me quiet wisdom this morning, Ursula. Good morning to everybody. Good morning to my colleagues and all of you who are watching and listening. My name is Dr. Peter A. James. I am the high-performance coach, helping you to shift your mindset and realize your potential. I am so excited this morning to be with this distinguished panel who we will dive into some insights. I actually love this because I get to dive into their brain, find out what's going on in the depths of their brain, especially around decision. So I'm excited this morning, Ursula. Great to be here.
All right. And to Sunshine Tagine.
Got to tell you, decision, this is like the juicy, juicy space for us to be in thinking and growing rich, to think and become who you are, to think and say, I own me, I know me, I'm the one that decides where I'm going. And how extraordinary for the decision that I made when Ann McNeil said, do I want to be part of this group, this mastermind, this motivating, intense, leadership driven, get your butt in gear, wake up every Saturday morning at 8 o'clock. And, you know, to be here with decision is great. My name is Pegeen. You just look me up as Pegeen. I don't need anything else. P-E-G-I-N-E. I haven't even had my coffee yet, but I'm so excited about this today. So thanks for bringing me on, Ursula. And I love my people.
And so do I. And I get, again, I'm Ursula Odom, and I'm CEO of Sula 2, and we make old new in everything we do, in that we capture, preserve, and present legacy information in any form possible. So all of that hard work and wisdom that you have, we transform it into books, legacy walls, and videos so that others can benefit from it. And that's why I love what we do every Saturday morning. It is a decision to be here because we could be somewhere else. But you know what motivates us? The fact that we can make a difference in other people's lives. And that takes a decision. And as we do that, you benefit us because we learn from you. And so let's get started. What I'd like to do first is to remind everyone of what the book is all about, 13 principles. So, Mr. Peter A. James, would you do that for us? Share it with us?
Yes, I will. And let me get them all in just a second here, there. All right, folks, good morning to you all again. You know, this book, Think and Grow Rich, is full of best practices. It's full of insight. It's full of everything that you need to get to your next level. And that's why, as a coach, as a business and leadership coach, I go back to a lot of these principles. I go back to a lot of these quotes by Napoleon Hill so that they are able to benefit me, my life, and my career, but also benefit clients as they are looking to realize their potential. And the book, the backbone of the book, I guess, is 13 of these principles that allow you to analyze your career and your business. And here are all 13 of them. The first one is desire. Desire is the starting point of all achievement, the first step to riches, as Napoleon Hill says. The second one is faith, visualization and belief in the attainment of desire. The third one, auto-suggestion, which I love. Auto-suggestion is the medium for influencing the subconscious mind, and it's important that we do influence the subconscious mind. Number four, specialized knowledge. Personal experiences or observations, maybe in your background, your education, your experience, you have specialized knowledge within you. It's important to pull it out. Number five, imagination. We all need imagination. It is the workshop of the mind. Number six, organized planning, which is the crystallization of desire into action. Organized planning is very important in this planning process. Today we're going through number seven, which is decision, which is the mastery of procrastination. The opposite of decision is procrastination. So it's important that you master that that part of our lives. Number eight, persistence. Persistence is the sustained and consistent effort necessary to induce faith. Number nine, power of the mastermind, the driving force. The mastermind is so important. What you're looking at on Zoom right now is a mastermind in process. We just happen to bring it to you, especially today with this master class. Number 10, the mystery of sex transmutation. So yes, we said the word sex. And I know it sells, but in this case, it also allows you to be able to get to your next level. There's a certain sexual energy that helps people to become more successful. Number 11, the subconscious mind, the connecting link. Again, we addressed subconscious mind a little bit earlier, but now this chapter, this 11th element here goes into more detail. Number 12, the brain, the broadcasting and receiving station for thought. And lastly, but not least, the sixth sense, the door to the temple of wisdom. And if you notice some of those themes that I've went through there, there's a lot in the subconscious mind, the sixth sense. Napoleon Hill does a great job of diving into your psyche, diving into what's going on below your iceberg in order to, for you to be able to experience success as you define it. Ursula, those are the 13 steps.
Thank you, Dr. James. So, decision. Napoleon Hill says, God seems to throw himself on the side of the individual who knows exactly what he wants. If he is determined to get it, it will happen. Okay? So here's what I think of when I think of decision. You know, some people have said, lead, follow, get out of the way. Well, that's what decision means. You either lead this effort, or you follow someone who knows what to do, or move, because somebody may actually be in a position to take action on something that will benefit you. But even if you move and you think you're doing nothing, you have actually taken action because you allow progress to happen. So you determine where you are. But as you do that, I want you to use your imagination, because we talk about this being a master class, or what we've talked about in the past is sitting around the table and talking. So here's what comes to mind when I hear that. When I was a teenager, I was in New York, and my uncle was the chairman of the Social Workers Union in New York. And he took me to Harlem, and we went to a brownstone. And down in the basement of that building was this huge, wonderful, dirty table. And in the middle of the table was a pot of soup. And we sat around and talked, and they talked about some things that were in the news and now as a part of the history book. It was a wonderful experience. And that's what this is today. We will be talking about things that are about the past, about now, and what may impact the future as well. So I want you to use your imagination. Now, as you sit around the table at the in the brownstone, they had a big pot of soup. Well, you might want to have a glass of wine, or you might want to have, if that's not your thing, a cup of coffee with some Irish cream in it. Okay, so it's morning time, and I'm having black coffee. So whatever your true serum choice is this morning, use it, because we want you relaxed and joining the conversation. So for my fellow panelists, we're going to start by talking about decisions. I'm of the opinion that sometimes we look impulsive, and that's because we've already done the pre-work of deciding, well, of having that desire and having the faith in it, and then programming ourselves to do things automatically. We have the knowledge because we've studied. And then we have the imagination to think about what it might be like, and we plan for the moment. So when that moment arrives, we snap into action, and because we've already made the decision to move. But to others, it may look impulsive. So what I want to start out with is, what was your impulsive moment that really wasn't so impulsive?
Oh, I'm going to jump in on this one.
Okay.
What the world saw, and my mom, some family members saw as impulsive, was life transforming, and I made a decision. And that's when my first big, like, no, I'm owning this, was when I was 17 and a half. I was in the gang. I was a Bronx gang member, for those of you who don't know. I was standing in front of Jack's Candy Store. I had Lefty, Rats, and Peanuts next to me, and those were the girls. I had long hair with a bandana, smoked cigarettes, a jacket with chains on it. I looked like this, but inside my mind was this message: you are worth more than this. You have a mission, and you know it. And I saw in my mind a TV, an experience like this, where I saw my face going, I didn't know what it meant. I had no clue. But in that moment, I decided to leave the gang immediately. And at 17 and a half, in that corner, I said, I truly thought that I had to leave the country, that they would be after me. Again, that's a 17 and a half years perception of the world. They couldn't care less about me. But in my mind, I had to leave. And I went, I say goodbye to everybody, which is a whole long process. Went home, went into the basement, wrote at 5 countries that same day: England, France, Germany, Italy, and Spain. And I really wanted to go to Spain because my family is Hispanic, Puerto Rican, but I couldn't speak Spanish well at all, even though I was in a Latina gang. We all spoke like that. None of us could speak Spanish. And so I really wanted to go to Spain, but I was a little bit afraid to make that decision. I knew I was going somewhere, and I put it, and it was Spain, and within 2 weeks, I was on the flight to Spain by myself. I had discovered $1,000, which I have since paid back. And my mom, she didn't know what was going on. She just knew this girl is on a mission. And it transformed my life. By the time I was 23, I owned the first bilingual nursery schools in Spain. And I came back to the States, sold those at a profit, came back to the States, and the rest is history. Because I'm here with all of you.
Thank goodness.
My decision. Dylan, did you ever have a decision?
Yeah, I mean, so several decisions. And, one that stands out to me that seemed impulsive at the time was in choosing the person that I was going to spend the rest of my life with. It literally seemed crazy that after 3 months of dating, I decided that this was it. That there was no need for looking anywhere else, and I started plotting and planning how I was going to make this a lifelong commitment. And anyone who knows me knows that I typically don't do things that seem impulsive, right? There's usually a lot of thought. There's usually a lot of research, investigation, and this came out of the blue. And I think my family was like, what in the world is going on? But it really is the result of, and this is kind of what I came to as I was reading this chapter again in preparation for this show. It really comes to a point where you've got to get tired of the alternative. You've got to get really, really, truly sick and tired of the alternative of this decision that you know you have to make. Because I think deep down, we all know what we have to do. The question is, do you have the words to articulate what that thing is, and do you have the courage to take that step? And if you don't, if you're not truly, truly sick of the alternative, you're going to continue to keep your foot in both fields. You're going to keep yourself in a situation where I can go back if I have to, right? And I think, you know, since we're talking about marriage, I think many marriages fail because one or the other, they want to keep their options open. They want to go back. They want to have that avenue to go back into the single life if they have to, and they have not made the decision. I think anyone who is not experiencing and enjoying the kind of life that they want, I'm going to suggest that you just really haven't gotten sick and tired of the alternative yet. In this chapter, it talks about the founding of the country and the 13 colonies and all these people that just literally got sick and tired of the existence that they had under Britain rule. They just literally got sick and tired. And so then they started throwing things in the harbor. They start saying these pretty obnoxious things back to the British government because they just got sick and tired. And so my question that I'd love for us to explore on this conversation, and the question that I'm going to pose to everyone watching or listening to this, is when are you going to get sick and tired? When are you going to get sick and tired of not having money? When are you going to get sick and tired of not having success? When are you going to get sick and tired of talking about things you're going to do? And here comes my favorite phrase, someday. We all know that someday is not going to come. Someday usually means, when I hear someday as a coach, usually what I'm really hearing is I don't have the courage to do what I really, really want to do, and I don't want to tell you because I know you're going to force me to do it, so I'm going to say someday, right? And it's okay. You can say that to me because I'm going to be polite to a certain degree and let you get away with it, but you can't fool yourself. And so I'm on a bit of a soapbox right now. So I'll let you have it back, Ursula. But for me, decision is really about getting sick and tired of the alternative. And once you get to that point, then things really start to happen.
I knew you were going to say someday, because one of the things I like to say is someday is today. So let's get it done. Dr. James.
Yeah, wow. Following up Pagin and Galen is a tough road there. However, when they were talking, and especially Pagin, you know, I was reflecting on, you know, and this is also to your question there, Ursula. When we were younger, it was much easier for us to make impulsive decisions, right? It was almost like it was somewhat refreshing. We could do that. As we get older, as we mature, I would like to say, what happens? What happens to us making not so much impulsive, but gut decisions, decisions that we know are right, but we hesitate? And why do we hesitate? So now what I'm challenging everybody who is listening to do also is to think of, what's the healthy balance between impulsive and not and indecision? What is the healthy balance between impulsive decisions and indecisions? And so maybe the question can be asked this way as well. What is getting in the way in your life of you making a decision that you know you need to make? What is getting in the way? Why aren't you making it? Galen said, don't wait on someday. Why aren't you making it? What is it? And I think the first step is to analyze why you're not, but then to say, you know what? It's time for me to go ahead and jump in the pool. I've prepared. I've done everything I need to do. Why am I not doing it? And I think this decision chapter really details a lot of why you need to be doing what you know you need to do.
So I'm going to switch up. The master builder, he just posed the question. Would you answer his question?
Oh, my. One word. The answer to his question is found in one word. Now, do any of you know what that word is? This is the master class. It's one word.
And you are the master builder, so you have to let us know.
Thank you, Peter.
Anybody want to take a
probably fear. I'm going to say fear.
Nope.
Action.
And so for those of you who are listening, my question was, what is getting in the way of you to make that decision? Remember, we had impulsive. Now we have indecision. What's getting in the way for you to make that leap? And so Anne McNeil, the master builder, she's trying to prod us to get the answer here.
We got some answers there in the chat too.
So it's a teachable moment.
Okay, this is deep. This is very deep. And we want to ask everybody who's listening on the radio, if you want to press 1 on your dial, we'll take your answer. If you're listening on Facebook Live, if you think you know the answer, you can put it in the chat. We're monitoring that. And if you're listening to us on Zoom, we will have your.
So I'm going to share some of those on Zoom right now. Here are some answers that are coming up. From Camilla Williams, fear. From David Emmanuel, we can't see the. Camilla then says, changes into clarity. Then Valencia, fear. Gail Crocker, accountability. David Emmanuel, thinking. Laverne says, self-confidence. Marcia says, lack of confidence. Daniel, David says, mindset. And the master builder goes,
No, the answer to the question is this. And I have to tell you the story first, and you'll get the point. The story is December 31st, 1979. Now, my book is in individual pages because it has no spine anymore. But the first principle of the philosophy is the answer to the question, always. And that's desire. If you don't have a desire, then what is going to move you, urge you, push you through? So when you go to make a decision, if you are making a decision without a desire, what's it for? You see, each one of you, when you shared your story, you made a decision. Galen made a decision. This is it. But he had a desire for his wife. But Galen made a decision. This is it. But she had a desire for a better quality of life, and she wanted to live past the age of 21. Peter, the answer to the question is principle number one that you read when you did the 13 principles. And I will tell you, every single thing we each do in our life, if we don't have a burning desire for something greater, every challenge and every struggle will overcome us, and we will surrender to that. So I am, you know, so Ursula, I don't know if I'm on this list, but my decision to read the book and allow the book to read me, my decision to have a desire to save $1,000 a year when I was so deeply in debt, it took me 10 years to get out of debt. But my desire right now, a burning desire, is to save passively $1,000 a day. So unless we each have a burning desire for something greater, you know, drop the mic.
Let me highlight something that Ms. Ann just said, because very often brilliant people will drop these jewels and just keep moving because it's really nothing. But the key thing that she said that I locked onto, and I think it was at the heart of what you heard from me earlier, is she said that you have to have the desire for something greater. You have to believe that there's something greater than your current situation, whatever that is, whatever category that is. But if you don't believe that there is something greater, that there's a possibility for something greater, that where I am is, if you still believe that where I am is good enough, which is my second favorite phrase, second least favorite phrase, good enough. What the heck is good enough, right? What the heck is that? That's settling. By definition, that's settling. And once you decide that there is something greater for me, and therefore I'm going to reach for that something greater, I don't know how to get it, I'm just going to reach into the abyss for something greater, I think to your point, Ms. Ann, that's where the magic starts to happen. That's when you get to make the decision. That's when all these other principles find their home, because otherwise you're just floating in the river.
So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just want to jump in there for a minute, because I think that I want to tie what Peter, Ann, and Galen are talking about, and I think that, you know, as we mature and go forth in life, and we make these different decisions, and then there's this part within us that is saying, you know, is there more? What else is more for me? Where else do I can go? But then your decision becomes, and I hear this so often from people, well, they'll say, you know, I want to make money, or I want to do this work on behalf of women, or I want to do this work. But they don't fuel the desire, like stoke that desire so that they can make the decision. They say they want to do that, but what's the stoking? And I think that Anne or Galen, you know, was talking about what, yeah, Galen had said, you know, it's when you're tired of being tired about this stuff, right? And for Anne, it was once you take that, you know, here I have this book. I decided to make $1,000. And now I want to make passively save $1,000 a day. How the transition became. I think that it's really important for people to understand that desire starts not with this. Well, sometimes it starts with a bang on your head. I told God, stop. I used to say, God has hit me in the head with a frying pan, so I could make a decision. Then I learned, stop doing that, because he was hitting me with a frying pan. That was not helping me. But now it's just like, help me focus on my desire. But the desire leads to the decision. And then you have to keep on fueling that desire to keep going through the 13 steps. Because Anne or Ursula, you started them earlier about, you know, there's a moment where you have to go over, through, around. You just say, I'm not giving up. But you will always be tested about your decision and your desire. You'll always be tested. And that's why this decision, chapter 7, the mastery of procrastination, you're tested
constantly about, are you going to keep your decision and are you going to fuel your desire? And as you mature and get older, listen, we're all going to age out. We're all, at one point, we're all going to put our head on the pillow. The decision is when you have your head on your pillow and you're taking those last gasps of breath, are you going to say, and are you, will you know within you, I did good. I did what I chose. I'm getting such, when I get chills, it's just like, I know that there's like this message of, are you willing to allow yourself to be in this pose of looking up and saying, I did good. I did good. Or are you willing to just, see what happens? Don't do that. What do you think, Ursula? I see you.
Well, yeah, you're sparking a number of things. But starting with Anne, when she was talking, what came to mind for me was the statement some people use about how bad do you want it? So that speaks to desire. If you can't answer that question, how bad do you want it? And if you haven't even thought about it, then you don't want it that bad. Your desire is not there. And then, Pagini, when you were talking, it reminded me of a conversation I had with somebody I grew up with. And he had been encouraged to become a pastor. And he was saying, no, that's not me. I don't want to do that. No way. Even though he'd been in the church all his life, he just refused to accept what apparently everybody else saw in him. And then one day he saw, well, he found himself upside down in a burning truck. And he started praying, oh, Lord, if you just get me out of this, I will be that preacher. And so he said to me, Ursula, he was responding to something I had said. He said, it looks like you're listening to God. He said, because you don't want to be upside down in a burning truck for God to be able to speak to you. You need to listen before it gets that serious. So we're getting these messages from the universe, from God, of whatever your spiritual belief is. It's coming your way. But are you listening? Are you making decisions? So if someone else want to speak to that, fine, but I'm going to move on to something else.
Yeah,
anyone else want to speak to this?
First of all, I want to jump in on that a little bit too, and you're right. It's a very great question. Are we listening to God? You know, what also resonated with me as you all were talking, you know, oftentimes someone may say, you could be chasing all of your life. You could be chasing something, chasing some desire. And that's an interesting perspective. But one thing that I know about my colleagues in this panel is this. God has put us on this earth for a reason, for a purpose, right? And so now, and that's all of you who are watching and listening as well. So how, why, and when are you going to start accomplishing your purpose, what you were put on this earth for? And this desire that Anne talked about, this decision that we're looking at in this chapter, are critical steps in you reaching your or realizing your potential, realizing your purpose. And I don't know about you, I'm still looking to achieve my purpose. I know what my purpose is, but I'm in the process of achieving it. So what about you? You know, what is that looking for you? And this chapter and decision is a critical, critical step in order for you to go ahead and, again, make that leap. Use desire to make that leap. Good stuff.
Now, on page 153 of the book, they talk about when it was a moment where the country changed because we were breaking free from Europe, and the Boston Tea Party happened, and the people made a decision. Yes, the Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, the Ross Comwell edition with Miss Anne McNeil actually in it. That's the version that I'm talking about on page 153. what I know, even though the book doesn't actually say it, is the moment that that revolution started, it started with a black person dying, and that's Crispus Attucks. And what I want to ask is, at that moment, he made a decision that was life-impacting, but it changed the world. And I would suspect that it wasn't as impulsive as it may seem or people may think, because they probably sat around the table and talked about what those British were doing and what they were, how they were feeling about it and what could they do about it. And they probably said, well, if one of them come my way, I'm going to pick up a brick and just hit them with it. So casual conversation was then inside their bodies, their spirits, their minds. And when that opportunity presented itself without thinking, they probably took action because the decision had already been made. They saw it in their head and they made it happen. And combined with that, slightly a different, lighter version of that is some people say, I know it when I see it. So they've already decided what they want, what it's like, how they want it to happen, but they haven't really had it totally crystallized in their mind. They didn't know what that Crispus Attucks moment would really look like, but they knew it when it happened. And you know it when you see it. So what's your know it when you see it moment? What was that for you all?
Ursula, before you go into that, for me, you said something so important. And in my work, when I'm coaching women executives and women leaders, and in the conversations that I have with people globally, is the concept of they hear stories about the decision where people have put their life on the line. And what is interesting is oftentimes they think of their own personal decision as being so big that they're not willing to give up their life on the line. Or their family, or to jeopardize this or that. And I know that I made a decision back in 2000 when we just moved to Florida. I had just moved the kids. I had just moved, you know, my family. I uprooted them all to come from New York down to Florida. And the week I arrived, King's World offered me a TV talk show in New York to be, and they were funding it and all that. And while it was alignment with my desires, oh my God, I just wanted that so much. But what held me back from saying yes, and I turned it down, was I didn't want to give up my family. I didn't want, you know, I had made this decision with the family. I had to, now, from a business, from a personal desire piece, oh my gosh, it was painful. Right? Here I had been on TV all the time for years, worked with Montel. He won Emmys. This was my place. But I understood when I made the decision to move everybody down that there was also this other decision I had made, going back to Galen, where I had married the man of my dreams. We had two magnificent kids. And, you know, it's painful sometimes to look at what are the two decisions that you've made and where do they coincide. Now, years later, I realized, yeah, I could have left the kids. I could have gone back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Ann McNeil agreed me like, girl, we could have worked this out. I didn't know you, Ann, back then. I could have worked it out. But I think that our fear of we've made these different decisions in our life, that if we take this decision, will we lose what we have? And I'd love you to just address that, because I know that, you know, that's part of what happens with decisions and why people don't take decisions or maybe choose a decision that supports one part of the life but maybe not the other part. I'm throwing it to you, Ann.
Oh, I'm between Ursula's question and you're throwing it to me, and which one do I answer? So I'm in between the two. So I heard you. So, Ursa, can you restate your question, please?
You're really going to ask me to do that?
Yes.
No, Peter, you're good at that. You restate my question.
Ursa's question was, how do you know it when you see it? You know,
oh,
how
thank
you. Know when it is to kind of make that decision
me,
when
now,
you see
it. Let me go right between the two and share a story, personal story, and give me death or give me what I'm asking for. And I think that what happens oftentimes when we're willing to put life on the line, oftentimes it is about other people. See, so Begin was willing to put her family first. The founding fathers and the crew, okay, the tribe, were willing to put the colonies first. And so for each of us, what are we willing to die for? And as I sat and I listened to the dialogue between the two of you, a story came up for me that's personal, and it's the only time in my life I remember, as scary as it sounds now in retrospect, that I was willing, and actually I was in this decision chapter. And my daughter tells me often that I beat too much of Frederick Douglass and all of that Black history. And I was in between three Frederick Douglass books at the same time and in this chapter. And then as I began to realize that Emerson and the abolitionists and all of these people were in that same period of time, and I began to internalize this chapter and ask myself the question, what am I willing to die for? Really? Honestly? What could happen in my life? And lo and behold, a situation happened, and this is what the situation was. May I share?
Yes.
Okay. I am a Black contractor, first Black female contractor in the state of Florida. And being a Black contractor, small business, I drive out of my hometown, West Palm Beach, to Miami, 40 years, because I'm Black and I'm a female. And there is a law that I've been pushing for to have Black set-aside programs in my county. When the race riots happened in early 1980s in Miami, because McDuffie died, upstanding, riding a motorcycle, he was killed by the police. They did a disparity study that showed that 0.1% of Miami-Dade County budget was given in contracts to Blacks, but Blacks represented 30%. Of the tax base. So they did what's called a Black set-aside. I'm driving to Miami every day, 20 years for that Black set-aside. But why am I leaving my hometown for that? So I decided, as a part of being the founder of the National Association of Black Women in Construction, to push for, along with a small group of women, the same thing that we should have the same thing here, a black program. We pay taxes. Finally, the day came when we were going to be able to have this program. We did the disparity study. The county paid for the disparity study. And I'm not going to call any names. I've done this already on Facebook, and I got in a lot of trouble, but I don't have a problem with trouble. That's a decision that we make. But our mayor decided that she was going to muzzle us and not allow more to speak. So I decided, as I looked around at all the other Black folks and signed on the back of the check and not the first, and they could not speak out of fear of losing their job. But when I made a decision to become an entrepreneur, I became a free slave. Excuse me. Okay, that's another show for another day. But I decided I am not going to be muzzled. I took my selfie stick, and I took my camera, and I went down to that place, and all of a sudden it came back to me. All the slaves that died for a cause for us to live, they made a decision. Was I willing? And I said to myself, and I get emotional right this moment, I said to myself, I am willing to give up my life for this.
everything I own, I'm going to put it on the line and sue my county for my right. For my right. And this is what I did. It's on Facebook. You can go back. You can research it. Me with the camera on Facebook in the middle of the night. Why? Because we had a meeting that day and nobody decided they were willing to do anything. I couldn't sleep. Got up, put on my red shirt, my selfie stick, and I stood in front of that building, and this is what I said. I said, you, like the slave, you can shoot me, you can castrate me, you can tie my dead body to the back of that red truck, and you can drive it around the street so all the other slaves, black business owners, can see that if you speak out, this is what could happen to you. But I refuse to be muzzled. Not going to happen. And I spoke my truth. The next day that item passed. Now, that was a decision I made. Give me liberty in my taxpaying county or give me death. It's a decision. Now, I'm not asking anybody else to make that kind of decision. And, of course, I did not always going to go there on this show. But when you sign on the freaking front of the check, you have a right. You have a voice. Shame on each one of us if we elect not to use that voice. Now, back to you, Ursula. I'm good.
You know, what's so wonderful about hearing you say this, and by you talking about the technology, we know this was recent. This just happened. You live in this today. So what this reminds me of is when I was asking questions for a video of Mr. James A. Hammond, I would ask him what gave him the courage to stand up to the Klan, basically, when they were desegregating the bus stations, and he was a colonel traveling with an integrated team and the whole group. And he got annoyed at me. He said, it wasn't about courage. He didn't understand what I was talking about. He said, it wasn't about courage. He just kept saying it. But he eventually got through that video, and he said what needed to be said. But I didn't understand at the moment. When I fully understood it is when I was at a Christmas celebration where a family would give awards to fellow family members. And this daughter was giving an award to her mother. And they were telling the story about how the mother stood up to the Klan. Like, she got in her face and was shaking her hand and was doing all kinds of stuff. And I looked at her, the mother, and I said, what gave you the courage to do that? The mother didn't have a chance to answer. The daughter said, the words I asked was, what were you thinking when you did that? And her daughter said, she wasn't thinking about anything. There wasn't a thing that she was thinking about. She wasn't thinking about her children. She wasn't thinking about her husband. She wasn't thinking about nothing around her. All she knew is that they were wrong, and she was in their face, and she was acting. And so when that moment comes, your soul already knows what your decision is.
Exactly.
And you just move on it.
One of the things that I've been thinking about was your original question about how do you know, right? How do you know when you're at that point? And another author that I love to read is Susan Scott, and she's the author of Fierce Conversations. And one of the things that she said was that all conversations are with ourselves, and occasionally they include other people. and I believe that the longer that conversation goes with yourself, it could be God talking to you. And the question becomes, when will you start to listen to that conversation? When will you start to acknowledge that there is a conversation going on between you and God, and it's usually having to do with what you are here to do? And I don't subscribe to this image that we've created of a God that's always loving, that's always caring. I believe that he is. But I think it gets kind of frustrated at a certain point. It's like, what do I have to do to help you understand what you are here to do? And I think that that's the point where we get frustrated, we get upset, we get unsatisfied with good enough being good enough, and we act on it. And usually it seems spontaneous. Usually it seems out of our character, because our character is about our brain. We'll talk a little just. the hot second about how our brains are constructed. Our brains are constructed with one purpose and one purpose only, and that is to keep us safe. So anytime you're thinking about anything, usually those thoughts lead to, this is how I stay out of trouble. When you just act, when you get out of your conscious mind and you just act, you are more closely aligned with what you are here to do, with your purpose. And this is not to say that there's no room for analysis, there's no room for learning, because there is. But the real magic happens, when you do as you just described, you stop thinking and you just act.
So now that you have the mic, why don't you talk about the annual meeting?
My God,
that's one of those decision moments.
Yeah, the annual meeting, that is one of those pressure point moments. I was actually involved with this group, this mastermind, for about a year before I attended the meeting. And quite honestly, I just attended because, let's be honest, Ann McNeil is kind of scary at times. And she kind of scared me a little bit. And so I said, okay, I'm going to go ahead and go because I don't want this. She looks small, but I'm kind of afraid at times. And so that's why I attended. And there was some pre-work that we had to do to get ready for it. But, oh, my gosh, by the time I got there and saw everyone of like-minded pushing for this thing that was greater, taking control and taking responsibility over their lives and achieving this thing that they believe that they were destined to do, it really is an inspirational moment. Let me just tell you a little bit about what you're going to experience when you're there. Before you get there, you have to pull together almost like an annual report for your life. You have to give an account for how did you spend the last 365 days. What did you set out to do, and then what did you actually do? And you have to come prepared to discuss the review of your last year. And then you have to give your plans for, this is what I'm planning to do for this upcoming year, or for the next 5 years, or for the next 10 years. But if you can't give accurate account of the good that you've done towards achieving your goals over the past year, there's going to be a lot of people looking at you side-eye at the table when you say, but next year, this is what I'm going to do. Wait a second, you didn't do anything that you were supposed to do this past year. So it's that level of accountability that that really does up your game. And, I'll tell you, I attended that first meeting with a bit of arrogance. I was thinking that my game was pretty tight and few people could tell me anything. And I had to sit there and really reflect on what did I actually accomplish. And now as I prepare for this next annual meeting that I've already signed up for, I've already paid my little money for, I'm already planning to go, whatever format it's going to be, I am going to be there. I am really, really making sure that I can give a good account of those things that I said that I was going to do in 2020. This is one of the decisions that if you spend more than 15 minutes thinking about, you are really doing yourself a disservice. You need to just plan to be there and go. Before you can think yourself out of it, pay the money, register, and just commit to being there.
All right. Thank you very much. It is indeed a wonderful experience. So as we prepare to wrap up, if there's anyone in the chat that the game wants to share, this is the time to do that. And in the meantime, would each of you tell people how they can get in touch with you and your words of wisdom for the moment?
I just want to jump in here with some of the chats, if that's okay with you. The chats are super robust this morning and filled with some amazing. So, Ann McNeil, your message got lots of people chatting about, thank you so much for saying what you said and standing up and speaking up. And Marsha wrote, in order to achieve anything great in life, one must do the work to declutter the mind, spirit, and soul. It is a life long process, but it brings us closer to our purpose. Once we declutter, we must renovate our mindset with positivity, faith, and the desire to align ourselves with our purpose. That desire should be fueled with persistence, faith, to get us to make a decision consistently reflecting on and plot and applying the principles of Thinking Grow Rich will allow us to arrive at our destination triumphantly. And people were celebrating that a lot. David said, I'm scared, so I thank you. I've determined that I'm placed here to build wealth for my bloodline and all names attached to me. After that, you can take this vessel that my spirit lives in. I've watched generational wealth go away. I love that. That's such a great post. And then lots of cheers for all of you, for Galen and sharing your fierce conversations. And this it says, thank you, panel. So, so good. I appreciate what each of you offer. And so that's the recap there. We're also on Facebook Live. There have been several chats going on here about the conversation today and the power of it. So I'm happy. I don't know if there's anything in Blog Talk Radio. If anybody has a question, I'll break to Laverne. But I'll go back to you, Ursula, and I'll finish up with saying, you can follow me. Just go for PEGINE. You'll find me everywhere. And for those, and you can go and find me at powerwomenworldwide.com. Remember, be bold, be brave, be seen, be heard, and be paid well.
Go ahead. All right, Dr. James.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ursula. Such good stuff, such rich stuff today. You can definitely connect with me at Dr. Peter A. James on any social media platform. My website is shiftyourmindset.com. But also I want to challenge those listeners or those watchers. What's going on in your gut right now that you know you need to move on? You know, Ursula kind of mentioned it. You know it. But instead of the young you who would be impulsive and just do it, now you're a mature you. You know, what is getting in the way of you doing it? It's time. Time. And you have enough resources around you to move forward, to make that decision. So don't hesitate. Let us know if you need some guidance around it. But also dive into this Think and Grow Rich book because there are some phenomenal insights that will help spur you on.
Thank you. Galen.
Yeah, so Galen Bingham, the leadership strategist, I believe that everyone is designed to be the greatest in the world at something, and your life's mission is to find your thing so you can get on with celebrating being the greatest in the world. And I am here to help you on that journey. If you believe that I am the guide to help you get to your destination, I'd love to help you. You can reach me at galenbingham.com, GalenBingham.com, and we can have a conversation. If you are really ready, my coaching business is killglobalcoaching.com, KILN globalcoaching.com. But if you step into the kill, we're not playing around. We are absolutely going to crush your most important goals, and so you just have to be ready for that. Enjoy the show, and would really encourage everyone, if you don't have a copy of this book, you are doing yourself a major, major disservice. And let's face it, you're just playing at this thing called life. This book is the cornerstone to achieving any success that you say you want to have.
And I'm going to go next. I'm Ursula Odom, CEO of Sula 2. And for those of you on Zoom, I'm sitting in front of the home of Mary McLeod Bethune, a woman that knew how to make decisions. And she made decisions that impacted all of our lives, even up to this day. You like the Tuskegee Airmen? Well, somebody had to decide to argue for them to have the right to learn how to fly planes. So don't tell me it doesn't affect you, because it does. And you can reach me through sulatoo.com, S-U-L-A-T-O-O.com, and just Google Ursula Odom, and you'll find me either as Mary McLeod Bethune or a publisher, author, and a person that simply loves the story. Now, the Master Builder, I deliberately wanted you to go last because I want you to let them know how to reach you, but also give them a preview of what's to come next month, the next chapter, Persistence.
Well, I think you might be calling on Laverne. That's my boss. She tells me who's up next and what we're supposed to be doing, but AnnMcNeil.com, you can reach me there. Google Black Women in Construction, or you can Google Thinking Grow Rich. I come up there too. And I just really want to encourage everybody, make the decision. Make the decision to think and grow rich. Such a simple, simple, simple statement, but there's so many pearls in it. So we will be starting on the Persistence chapter next week. I'm not sure who the guest is. Laverne, if you want to come off mute and share with us who our guest will be next week.
Our guest will be the fabulous Miss Marsha Walsh, who is on the Zoom with us today, and we will be excited to speak with her and talk about how she's using persistence to apply, you know, to all the fabulous things she's doing in her life.
Now that she said that, as soon as I heard, again, reading that from a Marsha, she just said Marsha, assuming that it was you, Marsha Walsh. So we're very excited to hear that you're going to be joining us next week. So please, Marsha, give us your social media. And if you put that in the chat, then all of our listeners can plan to join us in advance and like and share the show. And let's set a goal to have over 1,000 views when you come on. That's leveling up. So we're excited. But back to you. Thank you, Ursula.
And now that you've heard the voice behind the curtain, Laverne Blackwood, I would like to say thank you from all of us to her and Doretha Dennis, because they keep us moving, keep us before you, and we are so grateful to them. And you should be too, because they keep us calm. I'm telling you, if it were not for them, it would be a little bit more frantic. So thank you both. And to all of you that took the time to stop and be with us this morning, we are grateful for that. So thank you. And come back next week, because that keeps us motivated. It's a part of what we do for you and for us, because we all want to think and grow rich. See you next week.